the lines of incarceration in some ways. It's not what you would expect. It's felt more like an outward bound experience. It felt more like something, you know, these women are providing a service for the state.
And have any of the women, have any of the prisoners who are fighting the fires lost their lives?
Yes. So that's how I was first sort of not introduced, but that's what why I wanted to write about the program. I had never fully heard of it. And I read a small article about Shauna Lynn Jones, who passed away in February of 2016. And she was on one of the crews in the Malibu camp. There are three female camps. And it struck me that nobody really talked about who she was, how she got there, her background, and how she ended up dead.
Well, we're going to continue this discussion, have you back on later in the week. This is a critical story. Jamie Lowe of New York Times will link to the incarcerated women who fight California's wildfires, has a new book out this week called Mental, and we'll interview you about that. Juan, you're going to be speaking at Rutgers tonight?
Yes, at the Barnes & Noble's bookstore in New Brunswick.
Check it out at democracynow.org. And Marilyn Ralston, thank you so much. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Decolonizing Our Activism Workshop, Saturday, October 28th at the Native American Youth and Family Center in Portland. The Decolonizing Our Activism Workshop welcomes all to attend this free, life-changing training, which incorporates traditional Native American teachings through stories, exercises, and discussions that are even more relevant and needed today. These workshops are conducted in a respectful way that is both healing and empowering. Again, that is Decolonizing Our Activism Workshop on Saturday, October 28th, 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the Native American Youth and Family Center, 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard, Portland, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Portland.
Talk about destruction. Don't you know you can count me? In, out, be all right. Be all right. Be all right. See, you got a resolution. Well, you know. Well, I'd love to see you look like. You ask for a contribution. Well, you know. Well, do it what you can. One money people mind that hate. I'll tell you, brother, have to wait. Constitution, well, you know, they'll want to change your head. And act as an institution, well, you know, better free your mind instead. Go kind, pick your chairman, Mal. Gonna make it anyhow. Be all right, be all right, be all right. Be all right.
All right. And good morning. Welcome back to Wednesday Talk Radio. I am your host, Paul Rowland. We have three guests scheduled, only one guest presently with us, and we're glad to have Briar Rose Schreiber. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And hopefully coming in soon will be Jonathan Ogden and Johnny Shaver, who, along with Briar Rose, are three of the eight or nine.
We currently have eight board members, and there's three vacancies left we're going to have to fill.
Of the recently elected Montaville Neighborhood Association board, which maybe some of you have heard about because their election was kind of in the news, and even before the election. Anyway, yeah, we're getting back to some local Portland stuff here. I've been talking a lot about big global and regional issues, climate change, things like that. We're going to be talking about the real nitty-gritty local neighborhood level of community and community organizing and governance, and hopefully learn some about a little bit about the history of neighborhood associations, a little about some of these controversies, and about what your all's dreams, goals, aspirations are for the near term. So you're elected for, what, 2 years?
There's both 1 year and 2 year terms. We have to actually figure that out, and we're going to be having a special meeting soon to work all that out. Normally it's right after the election, but because this election was under special circumstances, it wasn't quite possible to count all the votes and keep everyone around to be able to do that immediately afterwards.
All right. Well, for full disclosure, actually, I ran for the Montaville Neighborhood Association Board, and I think I did pretty well, but I didn't get elected. Anyway, so just to let people know, but you know, I'm magnanimous in defeat, so I'm glad to have you by the people who beat me.
Yeah, we had a lot of really good competition.
we're going to get into all that. Let me just read a little bit about what I put on my page, kboo.fm/Wednesday Talk Radio, otherwise known as my program page. The recent Montaville Neighborhood Association election had probably one of the highest turnouts and more controversial election nights in Portland history. Of course, I have no way of really knowing, but it seems that way. Some people, longtime observers, had said that was the biggest turnout they had seen. Several months of contention over a neighborhood Montaville Neighborhood Association resolution taking a stand against police homeless sweeps. There were rumored neighborhood connections to notorious alt-righter Joey Gibson, who in fact had announced that he was going to be at the meeting and then withdrew that intention, thankfully, which would have made it more tense than it was. Actually, it didn't end up being all that tense. But anyway, his intention to attend that meeting. The formation of the Montaville Initiative to oppose many of the sitting board members and propose some kind of alternative platform. And there's some controversy as to actually whether all the people on the initiative actually had actually decided to actually be part of that slate. Many interlocking issues here. The board, also there was the board candidacy of Micah Fletcher, who had, you know, as we all know, survived the MAX train a knife attack and killings of two people, and he had a serious wound, and he actually won. Anyway, many that and other things brought out several hundred local residents and outside observers to that meeting that was just, what, 2 weeks ago now?
Yeah, that's correct. That's true.
So in the end, none of the Montaville Initiative candidates actually won, surprisingly, and a number of young first-time candidates, and also not quite so young, including Fletcher, were elected to the new board. Like many Portland neighborhoods, homelessness and gentrification remain major and divisive issues in Montaville, among many others, and we'll be hearing about what those issues are. So as I said, I've got Briar Rose Schreiber, one of the newly elected members of the board. You are a software engineer and community organizer. You've served on the board of Stumptown Syndicate, which maybe you can tell us a little about, for 2 years, one of which as president. And in your you say you ran a campaign on a platform of mutual aid, solidarity, and direct action. Johnny Shaver, who will hopefully be arriving soon, will be serving their third term on the MNA board. In that time, they've served as social media coordinator, housing and homeless coordinator, and as board chair for 1 month. Shaver spent the last year specifically focused on bringing neighbors together to address issues of homelessness in Montevilla through mutual aid and community collaboration. I believe Johnny was instrumental in that homeless sweep resolution, right?
Johnny definitely had a piece with that. I don't believe that he actually brought that to the board, but one thing that he did do for our neighborhood, which is great, is last year, while there were some deaths on the streets because of the temperature and lack of shelter, Johnny actually organized a warming shelter outside of the city's purview, which housed over 30 people throughout that storm.
Right, right. And Ogden, who didn't provide me with a little bio blurb, but I know from his candidate, is a current student of electrical engineering and did serve as president of the previous board. And he ran on a platform of all neighborhood power to the people, hence my using Billy Bragg's version of the Beatles' Revolution. Is this a neighborhood revolution? No, because there's a lot of controversy around that. There's talk of Jonathan, when he arrives, can talk about how he was actually apparently circulated a document, or not really circulated, just sort of floated it to the Portland Assembly group about, you know, how to sort of take over a neighborhood organization in terms of, you know, getting a group of people with a common set of ideas to bring their ideas and politics to the neighborhood board, and there's controversy around that. There sort of seems to be a resurgence of interest in neighborhood organizing and using the neighborhood associations as a platform for doing community organizing. What's your take on that?
Yes, I'd say that even on a visceral level, I've just personally been having issues trying to even relate to national politics and international politics, when it's hard to not just become extremely depressed and feel extremely hopeless when I see some of the different things that come across the national news. But when I look at my own neighborhood and I talk to my neighbors and we have that face-to-face conversation where Facebook and other social media platforms aren't sort of mediating that experience and we're actually able to talk and get things done, I feel like we can actually address some of these really, really hard-hitting issues that the federal government has been incapable of being able to do anything. The city government has been unable to fail, or has been unable to succeed in those areas. We even heard the mayor last year during those big storms that we had pleading for help from the community to step up, and I believe that that is something that the neighborhood association can do. And I think largely that's where a lot of the division came down in this election, was this idea of what the actual role of a neighborhood association is, if it's solely for land use or if there is more that can be done, hence my platform on mutual aid and solidarity, because I really believe that when people come together and they work together and directly act, we can get a lot done.
And so I don't know, do you know much about the history of neighborhood associations?
A little bit. I'm fairly new to the whole neighborhood association style. I know that they started, I believe, in the 60s or 70s, sort of as a way to give more representation to the neighborhoods. And I think that that's changed over time. We, of course, in Portland have had a lot of racist history with things like the Portland Housing Authority. And I think when that was removed, I think a lot of that power from neighborhoods that went into homeowners and people with those vested interests kind of moved into the neighborhood association. And over time, it's kind of shifted its focus to the point that Chloe Udaly and some others I know have issued statements about, like, trying to come up with new ways to get better representation of marginalized groups across the city. So I feel like this is perhaps such a change in the type of demographic that we would see at these meetings. In the past, you mentioned that at this election, there were hundreds of people that voted. I believe the final count of people that showed up was over 300. And normally at these meetings, we have about 10 people. So this was quite a...
Probably not at the election meetings. There's probably usually a few more. Yeah.
There's usually a few more, but this is by far orders of magnitude larger. And we've seen.
That must be, you know, despite the controversial nature of that, it must have been heartening to see that much participation. If you can actually mobilize all those people to be, you know, to help on an ongoing basis, that would be something.
Yeah, that was actually part of my speech. We each had about 2 minutes to deliver a speech to the crowd at the election. And part of my speech was that I'm not a politician and I didn't necessarily want to be in a position where I was going to be representing people that did not want me there and did not want to work towards those goals. So I explicitly told people not to vote for me unless they really wanted to show up again and continue to be a part of that, because our neighborhoods are something that belong to everyone who lives in that neighborhood, be they housed or unhoused, regardless of race, religion, everyone should have a seat at that table. And it was really important to me to make sure that people actually wanted to show up. If people didn't want to, I feel like there's other avenues we could do similar work in, and I want to make sure that people get representation. But due to this great turnout that we had, it seems that a lot of people are interested in this model for organizing across the city.
Yeah, I'm really interested. You know, I obviously having run, I decided to run, I think, the Friday before the Monday election and didn't even prepare a candidate statement or anything. So, again, I thought I did pretty well despite all that. But anyway, because of all this that's going on and because of the things you're mm-hmm. saying, I mean, I feel all that too. I've always been a real neighborhood sort of person. You just feel, you know, I scavenge a lot of, you know, apples and pears and nuts from my neighborhood. I'm always on the lookout for, you know, the free piles. I mean, my perceptual orientation is very local, you know, mm-hmm. so the idea of actually, you know, I helped my mom buy a house in the Montevilla neighborhood 2.5 years ago. And I've never really been since I was a kid living with my parents in a situation where I was like in a kind of a stable, like, you know, property owning situation. It feels a little odd, you know, all these years later. But since I am, and I'm in a fixed location, it's like, you're kind of forced to like relate to your neighbors, mm-hmm. you know? I guess you could just avoid them. Some people do, clearly. But anyway, it's interesting, you know? It's like you can't choose your neighbors. You kind of have to take them as they are. So I'm slowly getting to know my neighbors. And the idea of actually doing politics and, like, you know, facing these really major issues we have looming in front of us, like climate change and continuing racism, gentrification, all these things, is I'm really looking forward to it myself. So it's a long-winded preface to a question. I was looking into the committee, like the way committees are. Are y'all looking to kind of use the committee structure to maybe involve some of those, you know, hundreds of people who are turned out for the election?
I hope so. There's a lot of bureaucracy in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, which is the overseeing structure for the neighborhood associations. And it can be hard to actually try to do anything that's a direct action when you're trying to follow Robert's Rules of Order and you have to give 7 days notice for that. And so there's slightly less stringent rules on the committees, and it gives more people in the neighborhood a chance to get involved. And I know in the past, I'd been involved with some committees with the neighborhood association before I joined the board, such as the Housing and Homelessness Committee that Johnny Chaver actually organized, where we worked on the warming shelter, and we were able to run that through the storm, like I mentioned earlier. And then we also were able to do other things, such as a community chest sort of fund, which people who were having housing issues could apply for a very, very small, like, micro grant to be able to continue to pay bills, keep the lights on, and things like that, because housing is something that many people in the neighborhood are struggling with.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Briar Rose Schreiber, newly elected to the Montevilla Neighborhood Association Board, and we hoped to have two other guests. Hopefully they will show up before the hour is out, but in any case, if they don't, I'll be glad to, we're going to continue this conversation and hopefully encourage some other people to call in who either live in Montevilla, are perhaps involved with their own neighborhood association, are involved in local politics, and are interested in how the neighborhood association can kind of fit into that. So the number to call in is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Does seem like a pretty heady time to be doing any kind of politics. What's your sense of both sort of institutionally and in terms of your where you're looking to go with the, you know, how the, you know, the neighborhood association organizing kind of fits in with citywide politics, with, you know, other forms of organizing. How do you see that?
Well, I think that there's two traditional roles that the neighborhood associations play. Most of the time, what the neighborhood association puts together are statements that are sent to City Hall or to developers urging them one way or another. And they aren't binding documents, but they are something that can go to City Council or the mayor, and they carry some weight because they come from the neighborhood association model. So, for example, the resolution against houseless sweeps for the neighborhood was a resolution that simply urged the mayor to stop houseless sweeps in the Montevilla neighborhood. It didn't have any sort of binding thing. We don't have the power to order the police to not do that. But what we can do is say that this is a statement that represents the community and the community's wishes.
But I read that mm-hmm. that was actually declared to be not a legitimate process in the passing of that resolution?
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, the Office of Neighborhood Involvement has quite a lot of regulations, and because the neighborhood associations are volunteer efforts, sometimes that can be very hard. You have people who haven't been on boards before. You have people who are coming out for the first time with very limited amount of time, and which happens a lot in these types of cases. Sometimes the agendas don't get posted in time, and the bylaws, unfortunately, are very specific. So with that specific agenda item, it wasn't listed properly, so it ended up actually being removed later because there was a grievance filed for that technicality on it. I still think that, although I had joined the board briefly, but I actually was elected into a vacant position right when the houseless resolution was brought to the table. So I actually didn't get to vote on it. I was actually part of that meeting where I was nominated. So I actually ended up being removed from the board after about a week in that case. But I was very glad to be able to run again for the election to be able to show that, you know, this is a good spot for me and it is a spot that people want me to be in. But that bureaucracy does cause some issues mm-hmm. with getting this stuff done, because it is very easy for people, especially when there's high turnover on that board, it can cause issues. So it is something that I'm interested in looking into in the future. I feel like there's opportunity for more neighborhood input to talk into that. But I feel like the goal of making sure that we're as humane as possible to our neighbors is something that everyone can get behind.
And Jonathan Ogden did succeed in getting here. Good morning, Jonathan.
Hey, good morning. I apologize for being late.
So you got onto 84 too, is that right?
I made that mistake.
I did too. Yeah. I had to take my brother to the airport. And I was like, oh, 84, usually, you know, around 7:30, or around 7:20, it's still, you know. But anyway, so here we are. And you are also, you are reelected. Briar Rose was newly elected to the MNA, Montevilla Neighborhood Association Board, and you last term served, and now we have our third and final guest to round out our table here this morning, just about to arrive, and you might get a little noise moving the microphone in front of Johnny's face there, and there you go. And good morning, Johnny Shaver.
Good morning.
And so you also were reelected?
Yeah, this is my third term on the board.
And Jonathan, how many terms have you served?
Oh, well, technically this is my first term because I was an appointment before.
Oh, okay.
So the way that would work is that if the board had vacancies for whatever reason, they're able to appoint somebody who comes to the meeting who says, hey, I have vested interest, I'd like to be a part of this. Here's my case, then they all vote on it, and they vote you onto the board. So that was how I originally got onto the board, but this is the first time I've been elected properly.
And as we were talking before, I don't know if you got a chance to hear any of this conversation, but...
I did, actually.
Briar Rose was saying that ordinarily, it kind of works like that. You know, it's like you have 5 or 10 people at the meeting, and, you know, you got an opening, and it's like, oh, I'll do it, and they'll just get in. But this was a little different. Maybe y'all could talk about your impressions about the process leading up to and at the election.
Well, this was unprecedented for Montevilla. My past two elections, there were maybe 20 people in the room, and there was no campaigning beforehand. I prepared a two-minute speech the first time I ran, And everyone told me that was unnecessary. You just get up there and you tell people who you are and that'll be fine. So so now there's lots of questions about, well, shouldn't we have an official election cutoff? Shouldn't there be a voter pamphlet that's officially put out? So those are all things that are very new ideas and far different than how most neighborhood associations function, and certainly how ours has functioned in the past.
In terms of what?
In terms of elections, you know, usually there's only 6 or 7 people running. You meet them the night of the elections, and then that's it, really. So,
Do you think there's been any kind of a I just sort of expressed this sort of off the cuff idea that there's a resurgence in neighborhood activism. It might be a little premature, but do you see any signs in other neighborhood associations of more interest, possibly as a result of this, or just sort of as a common groundswell of energy?
Well, absolutely. Like alongside of us, neighborhoods such as Mount Scott also pulled off a warming shelter during the same time we did. So there's definitely a lot of grassroots community organizing happening in neighborhood associations, especially further out east as we get fewer resources allocated to us.
Yeah, Mount Avila is sort of an interesting area. It's sort of on the edge. It's sort of getting more incorporated into the big gentrifying zone, obviously, but it's historically sort of been on the edge between East Portland and, you know, the rest of Portland.
Well, and it still is, because that money stops at 82nd.
Yeah. I'm on 88th.
Then you know.
I was so glad we finally got our potholes filled, boy. They were getting dangerous, positively dangerous.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's something. I live on 94th, so I totally understand that, and I think that's something that needs to be talked about a bit, for sure. I'd heard you mention briefly the history of the neighborhood associations, and I do think that is significant. I mean, if I could just touch on
please do.
Well, just moreover, neighborhood organizing as a resurgence. I think that's actually something that's kind of global. If you look around, there's a lot of different bases for that kind of organization to happen. So you have stuff like Barcelona and Comú, which I've mentioned before, that I really draw inspiration from, that is pretty much based around this platform of popular democracy. And the only reason that there's such a controversy right now over Catalonian independence is because they've done this years-long neighborhood-based organization to kind of impose upon Spain these requirements that they have from the neighborhood level, and then there's a big conflict about independence in that way. So I think it is something that's kind of making waves internationally also, that if we all pay attention, we can start to see. It's because it makes sense. Briar had mentioned it's about this sense of overwhelming despair you get when you look at global problems, because they are simply out of scale. You need things that are human scaled, and the neighborhood is human scaled, and people understand it intuitively, and they understand that they can help their neighbors because they're right there. It definitely makes for a good basis for ethical compassion, right?
Well, I think we've had a couple guests actually waiting for a while. So before we get into some of the other subjects, and we'll just go to our first caller. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sure. I wasn't sure. You didn't say my name, so I wasn't sure if it was me. this is awesome. Congratulations to you guys who won the seats on the Montevilla Neighborhood Association board. I think it's great. This conversation has so many things swirling through my head. You were talking about Catalonia and Indignados and Podemos, all of them really built from the ground up by the neighborhood group that organized politically. And that's really deep. I had the opportunity to carpool with somebody from Spain who was working here as a teacher for a year. And we just had some really rich conversations about how the political organization was happening. And those neighborhood groups were at the heart of it. Same thing. As you brought it up, I was thinking of the Bolivarian circles that were instituted by Chavez in Venezuela, where he had copies of their constitution printed and circulated, and then he said, every neighborhood, get together and read this constitution as a neighborhood. And, you know, organizing that from the bottom up. And so it's really heartening to see that folks are returning to these neighborhood associations because there's that diversity and resilience that comes with actually working with the people that you know. And as you mentioned, you know, looking around and walking through your neighborhood, you don't necessarily get to choose who that is. And so these are really sites for us to really come together and start to break down those false barriers that keep us separated as the people, and really start to organize in really meaningful ways with the people who are right in front of us. And, you know, Paul Cienfuegos and Richard Grossman and the program on corporations, law, and democracy, they were saying, you know, that was, I think, one of the big issues that they brought up was, like, we have to go to the place where we can leverage the most political power, and that is at the local level.
Okay, you're throwing a whole bunch of stuff. Maybe we should have our guests weigh in.
Yeah, sure.
Thank
so,
you.
So, yeah, what do you guys think? I mean, so I'm seeing those as potential right sites for this really grassroots level organizing. And my question that I wanted to ask you guys is, at what level do you see, like, cross-neighborhood communication and collaboration as possibilities? Like, you were talking about, you know, having a community chest. Well, what if you got some of the wealthier adjacent neighborhoods to start pitching in there as well and start really redistributing some of that wealth? So what kind of cross-neighborhood collaboration do you see as a possibility? And then there's a lot of talk about this resurgence in involvement in the neighborhood associations, the age demographic shift, other demographic shifts. What factors do you attribute to this? I'm hearing you guys talk
Okay, you're throwing a lot of stuff. Let's just let them respond here. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. This is Briar Rose. I think that a lot of the resurgence and people getting involved locally is extremely important, and once we have that, we can actually do a lot more and we can address these. I think Jonathan might be able to speak more towards some of the stuff that you were
speaking
on. Oh yeah, I mean, if I could comment briefly on it, there is a long history of South American neighborhood movements for sure, especially if you look around 2000 or 2010 even, because Argentina had two collapses. A lot of that movement, you know, fabricas recuperadas and other things like that, that ended up creating these parallel economies when the money had failed there. Those things all came from the neighborhood level. So I think there's a precedent for one. And definitely because of that, there's this kind of question of wealth, which you brought up, which I very much agree with. A lot of this has to do with wealth. I think a lot of the pains that Portland is feeling have to do with this introduction of new wealth. And it's kind of always centered around development with regard to these neighborhood associations. I've had a bit of a controversial time trying to make my point about that to some people because their expectation is that this should effectively be an extension of a homeowners association or something like that. But with regard to Portland's neighborhood system, how do we have some mechanism for collaboration cross-city? Well, there's already district coalitions that exist, and they're awesome. Like, Southeast Uplift has been super supportive and very helpful and knowledgeable and pretty much support the idea of what we're going for. I've been in communication before with Lore from East Portland Action Plan, which I actually believe the administration just transferred to Cameron Witten, who's a local activist around here. But there's a lot of people who are involved in the system already who have that type of mentality and understand the problems from the core. And that's something I think is really a good thing as far as a starting point. So there's a huge potential for using these district coalitions well to really get this democratic extension of the neighborhood to have some real effects, because people obviously think it should. There's a big buzz around this, even though literally a lot of the things we do are suggestions, right? Maybe there's a reason that these neighborhood associations should have a bit more power, and I think that that's something we could talk about.
Also, yeah. I've been this is Johnny. As this is my third term, I'm starting on the Neighborhood Association. I've been lurking and trying to, like, emphasize mutual aid and the need to get involved in the Neighborhood Association for years now. So for me, it's really exciting. And there's definitely a direct correlation between the action happening now and the election and the just general politic.
Listen, thank you very much for calling.
I'm wondering, the last thing I want to ask is, you know, because you're talking about, like, there's a ton of regulation around these things. I actually live in unincorporated Washington County, where we have citizen participation organizations. And what I'm trying to figure out, first of all, is where those CPOs, as they're called, where their power is located and where their authority and existence is located within the laws of Washington County. And for you guys, you have ONI, the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and kind of a labyrinthine system of rules and regulations. I want to ask about organizing for power within that structure. Are you guys pushing to restructure and advocate in order to get power, or how do you see that working through the kind of bureaucratic system that seems at times to be onerous in terms of trying to get movement going? So if you could speak to that, thank you guys so much. This is a really awesome conversation. Power okay. to the people.
All power to the people.
Always.
Yeah, if I could comment briefly, I think really the advantage here is that there is a new person in charge of ONI, right? So Chloe Daly, I believe, is the current director, right? And she actually went to the conference in Barcelona in 2016 and spoke about the politics in Portland. And so that was the Fearless Cities Conference for Barcelona Comú. And I feel like there's an advantage there to have people in power already who similarly understand the ideas of direct democracy and things like that. Because that is the fundamental structure here. So I think that right now is an opportune time in Portland because the Office of Neighborhood Involvement is looking for some new alternatives. There is advocacy for dissolution of the neighborhood associations as far as their geographic locations would go, and just kind of replacing it with projects that are more similar to East Portland Action Plan. I think that's a good idea, but I think you could hybridize that and simply just open up the playing field for more organizations and more interface with the existing neighborhood associations. And I think that had been mentioned by a few other people within the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. I think that's something that we all align on. And right now it's a good time to get involved if you want to push for that kind of thing, because it is something that they're already talking about.
Let's go to our next caller.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm going to go to the micro level. Y'all have been talking at the macro level. For those folks who've already been on the board, the Neighborhood Association, do you know a homeless woman named Diva? Diva is a long-term corner resident of the sidewalk on Southeast Stark, around 82nd. And I wondered if there was anything the Neighborhood Association could do to give her some assistance. She sits out in the cold and the rain and has for years, and some of us who pass by her try to drop off food and water and sleeping bags and such. But that's not a very good solution. So I was wondering if you all had any suggestions, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks a lot.
So I've actually worked with some neighbors to try to connect her with resources. We've had Joyne come meet with her. She is not in a place to be sheltered right now. There's a lot of mental health stuff that's coming into play for her. So I'm not on any sort of team for her, but I know that she has resources and folks who are reaching out with more formal resources. What we have done pretty regularly is anytime the weather gets bad, I go to her first. There's sort of a network of neighbors who help in the stopgap situation like that. During the snowstorm, we had a lot of folks asking her to come to the shelter, and she opted not to. So then we had folks coming to help her shovel and keep the snow off of her stuff.
Yeah, I think that this is a specific way that as a neighborhood, we can directly have that one-on-one individual connection. I know that throughout Montevilla, this is obviously a big issue. And I think one of the houselessness in general was an issue where multiple people had various positions if they, you know, agreed with the current city structure and the police plan to sweep people from there, or if they were against that. It was one of the hot topics. And we have that going on in our area. Every couple days I have people parked outside of my house. A few blocks away there was a camp on 83rd and Multnomah at an off ramp, and just to like speak to how unsustainable just having these camps are, because that was an off ramp, I went and spoke to the people who are living there, and they were worried about things that our whole community is worried about, garbage, but then, you know, needles, things like that, and wanting a way to be able to keep everything sanitary. And they were also worried about cars rolling as they turned off of the highway. And I think that this is a really dangerous situation for people that are on the streets. Obviously, they're in those, and obviously, that makes it harder to live in our community. So working together on these one-on-one interactions gives us more opportunities to be able to try to find bridges where the, you know, federal government certainly couldn't have a one-on-one interaction with this individual, and even the at a city level, it's hard. But we do have a lot of great neighborhood structures such as Join and other groups. And then
Join again?
Join is a day center that is over
What's the acronym stand for?
That's a good question.
I actually have no idea what the acronym stands for.
Never mind.
Mark Jolin, who heads the City and County Joint Office of Homelessness, he used to be the head of Join. It's got a pretty solid background in doing great houseless advocacy work and outreach.
Well, Johnny, before we have a full slate of three callers, which since we only have 20 minutes left, I want to get to. I want you to hold the thought of, you know, we had talked, me and Briar Rose had talked about, you know, that piece of the controversy, the houseless sweep resolution, and I know you were part of that, and you also formed this housing and homeless committee and helped organize that warming shelter. So maybe you could speak to that in a few minutes in terms of, you know, again, a concrete ways that the neighborhood association, Montevilla in particular, and in general, can actually intervene directly in these issues. But if you hold that thought, let's go to our next caller. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Mimi, and we had first of all, congratulations to all of you, because we're trying to do the same thing in St. John's, and St. John's has been co-opted by wealthy people coming in and gentrifying us faster than a blink of the eye. So when a couple of activists, there were three of us who were running for the board, one was brand new that night, on the election night, and two of us were signed up to be on the ballot. It was so corrupt. What went down in the voting was so corrupt to keep us off of the board, and we're fighting it now. But it's really interesting to me to see how St. John's and the power of gentrification is winning in so many neighborhoods. And I just wanted to let you guys know that those of us who are activists in St. John's see you, and we're so proud of you for getting it together over there. And we really need to, I think, come to you and get extra efforts to help us in St. John's so that we can stop this extreme gentrification that's happening really fast. And I just wanted to put that out there because you guys have it together. And we don't quite have it together. The people who did win to get on the board were people who have been in St. John's for literally 6 months. I've been there for 20-some years. Yeah. So they don't want any old St. John's people to be on the board because we know that we know how St. John's was. We know why people loved St. John's, and we want that back. And we want to maintain what's left. We've had everything. All the old stores are closed now. The Tulip just closed.
I know. Those were my favorite donuts in all of Portland.
Yeah. So those of us who have been around, we know what St. John's was. So anyway, I will be coming to you guys for help to reorganize if you guys have the time to do that. But power to you, and well done.
Thank you.
Thanks. I just wanted to add as well, we were very fortunate at our election because there was a lot of worry that we might have issues, but the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and Southeast Uplift both got involved, and we also had a great elections committee of neighbors that was able to come together to make sure that everyone felt like their vote counted and their voice was heard, and we were able to nip some of those things before they became a problem, which was good because, as was mentioned before, there was a lot of controversy heading into the election, but we actually had a pretty uncontroversial election other than it being very large when it actually happened because of those efforts.
Yeah, it seems so smooth for how many people?
Quick shout out to Yana, Amy, and Robin for making that happen.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you all so much.
Yeah, David too. So if I could comment real quickly, I know you'd mentioned the silent neighborhood takeover that was so controversial, but that really was inspired by this award that I had read about that was effectively developers giving themselves a pat on the back for killing the demo tax that was circa 2010 or so in Portland. It was $25,000 flat tax, and I can go into why I disagree with flat taxes, but the point is that these developers intentionally used this kind of neighborhood system to garner empathy for their causes based around things they knew that liberal Portland would like, and they were that blatant and callous about it. And so there really is this undercurrent of what I thought you could do is kind of what Mimi seemed to think also, is you go in there and you can influence the city and you stop these things, but really at the moment we can't, and maybe we should work on changing that. But what they actually do is a lot more pernicious. They go in and they basically put people in place who really have a sweetheart deal with them, you know, so people like in the moving industry or interior design or like these kind of ancillary industries to development, and they really get them to kind of be the mouthpiece to the city for these things.
Without naming names, you know specific examples of this?
Oh, no, this is just more the general trends, right? Like, I spent a decent amount of time on forums, like Stop Demolishing Portland. There's a lot of NIMBY stuff on there, but there's some legitimate critiques and data mining that people are doing based around the actual loopholes and things like that, like the lot splitting that a lot of these developers are doing, where they'll buy a big one, and because you have to get a permit to remove the trees on a 5,000 square foot lot or whatever, they'll split it so you don't have to, and they'll just level it, and they'll just build up one big building anyway. So, I mean, maybe that's inaccurate as far as the code goes, but it's similar problems like that. People just see that the developers don't have to play fair, and that's not good.
Yeah, so this, the beast of gentrification, which just about every city knows, seems like in the entire world now, which is, you know, sort of the stage of capitalism we're in, that everybody's looking for the speculative markets to increase their capital, whether it's bundled mortgages or fossil fuel extraction or rental housing or whatever, and obviously that's a huge thing. Maybe that's like in the 5 or 10 year plan, not the immediate term, but.
Well, and Montevilla is gentrifying incredibly quickly.
Yeah. If I could comment real quick, I would say that your emphasis on worldwide problem is absolutely true. And in fact, the issue is speculation around housing, and the UN has come to a consensus about that, and they put out a paper that basically had said that you need to stop valuing housing as a commodity. And so I think that right there is significant enough to where we need to change this discussion. Like, it is about capitalism. It's about what stage we're in and what the alternatives are. I'm very much an advocate of commons transition. I think we need a commons production system, and that's something that we might actually have a venue for in a neighborhood platform. And so that's really where I'm coming from, is it is a global problem.
As far as gentrification goes, we have a really interesting history in Montevilla as well. I grew up on the east side of Portland. I went to David Douglas High School when I was growing up, and I've lived off and on in Montevilla for probably the past 15 years. And it's really interesting to see how things changed. It was traditionally a very working class neighborhood, and then as people were gentrified out of other areas of the city, they've moved there, and now there's a really big, thriving refugee and immigrant population in the area. And I think Montevilla has done an extremely great job of opening its arms and welcoming these people there. And it's one of the things that I love about the neighborhood. And I feel like there's still a lot of ways that we need to grow in that. I feel like there needs to be more involvement from those communities and the type of organizing that I'm working on. But it's great to see that. And I feel like there is a lot of opportunity for Montevilla to grow. And the conversation needs to happen about how Montevilla grows, because obviously it's a changing city. The city's growing, and we're going to need to plan that. And we're at a critical point right now where I hope that the Neighborhood Association can give more voice to these groups and get more positive change happening.
Let me just say that this is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. I'm the host, Paul Rowland, every Wednesday morning from 8 to 9, just like you find other talk shows every weekday morning from 8 to 9. And the voice you just heard was Briarose Schreiber, newly elected board member of the Montevilla Neighborhood Association Board. We also have Jonathan Ogden and Johnny Shaver, who are both reelected just 2 weeks ago. And so, Jonathan, you wanted to say something, and we have about 10 minutes left and I think still a couple callers.
Okay. I don't want to take up too much space, but you'd mentioned that the neighborhood association should get more involved in this planning. That was the original comprehensive plan, from what I understand. It was effectively a Portland People's Plan that was created by these neighborhood associations that started from that neighborhood revolution movement in the 60s and 70s. So I think that maybe a return to that is a great thing.
When was that comprehensive plan?
Oh, I believe it was the first one. It was the one that killed a lot of the development projects that were pushed by the federal initiatives to build freeways and things like that, because they were, you know, of course, targeted towards people of color's neighborhoods, and they didn't like that, and a lot of people pushed back. And well, it started in Layer Hill, so it was a lot of the Italian and Eastern European communities as well, but it was moreover about displacement and not getting pushed out. But it made things like Tom McCall Park happen. That used to be a highway. It made things like a push toward light rail, which, for better or for worse, but it made the innovative changes that Portland was known for possible, and it all came from that.
Okay, well, let's go to our next caller. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, hello?
Yeah, go ahead, it's you.
Oh, okay. I just I guess I don't know what to say. I have so many comments as well, but I always feel like people are just so out of touch with other people's realities. And in 82nd Street, the poverty did used to always be lower class, and it actually used to be the churches were kind of more involved in this type of stuff. And it's always hard, you know, I know at Lentz Park, Cora Potter was worried about neon pavement in the park and making it beautiful, and people are coming here to kill themselves and commit suicide from the Iraq War. And a lot of people are pushed to their limits. And, you know, I can't say enough that Oregon had some pretty, we still have extreme poverty, but it's just, it's I guess because everyone wants to gentrify this side of town, now people care. But when I was younger, nobody cared. And in fact, nobody even came to our side of town because it was like it disgusted them. So I feel like some of the problem is, I mean, it's multiple problems, as you guys have all said, but like we're also a university town, and I've just seen so many people flipping houses to go to university and pay off student loans. And then I've also seen, you know, Americans are saying they hate capitalism. Immigrants love capitalism. So all these people from communist countries, they love capitalism. They're flipping houses. And
okay, well, listen up. You've raised a lot of issues. Thank you very much for calling. We only have a few minutes left. Go ahead. What do you have to respond? Anything?
Yeah. So, like I said, I grew up in East Portland, and I grew up very poor in that area as well. I grew up in a family of five as the oldest child, and I grew up in an 800-square-foot house where we had one heater, and often we wouldn't have oil to even have heat during the winter. So I'm very familiar with how the east side of Portland has been treated traditionally, and I think that there is a lot of space for us to, as neighbors, help each other, and that's why I believe in mutual aid and why that was part of my platform. I don't know how I could compel President Trump to possibly come help Montevilla. That becomes slightly more likely when we talk about Ted Wheeler and the mayor and city council. But I think that if we look beyond that and we look to our neighbors, maybe we can find some of these solutions to make life a little bit more livable for us.
You know, I was thinking, those comments about immigrants were interesting and very, very difficult and contentious. I noticed where I live that there is quite a number of Asian people, and I didn't see any Asian people at the election.
No.
I was wondering about that.
Representation has been a difficult thing. It's a difficult thing for all neighborhood associations. They've traditionally been older white homeowners, and so that's definitely been something that, at least in my time with the neighborhood association, I've been attempting to improve. We do a lot of work with Epano now. We do a lot of outreach with ERCO and a lot of other organizations that are really addressing communities, marginalized communities, communities of color. But that hasn't, we haven't found a way for that to pan out for the board.
It was a discussion during the elections committee planning, though, because one thing that I'm very much you know, in favor of is this idea of directly representative councils, wherein you could have district councils from each part of the neighborhood that had a body of neighbors making their decisions and then carrying that to the board, and the board is simply a conduit for those decisions to be made. So literally, the way I see it, the board should just be administrative. We make sure the bank account's in line, we make sure this is happening, blah, 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 and we give reports, and we say, this is what you want, but the council itself, the body of this neighborhood decision, in my opinion, is what I want to drive these projects, and that makes sense to me.
All right, let's go to our next call. We only have about 5 minutes left. Go ahead, you're on the air. Hello? Well, we lost them. Looks like we got another. Go ahead, you're on the air.
I am on the air, okay. Yeah, I joined my neighborhood association shortly after moving into my neighborhood. Got drafted to do the land use transportation, be the representative for that. And I jumped into it wholeheartedly and went to lots of meetings and seminars and whatnot, and reported back, and it seemed to fall on deaf ears. And then when they didn't like something, I frequently found that I was handcuffed. I had to be the voice for the neighborhood when I was in disagreement with kind of their will. And also, so I left, and I found I got a whole lot more done working with a loose coalition of neighbors who really didn't participate in the process. It just seemed to drag it down. We have a small board. They've been there forever, you know, and they're just not open necessarily to kind of new ideas, you know, very resistive to proposals of the comp plan and this kind of thing. And so, you know, when I went down to City Hall, I would just speak for myself, you know. I found that was easier than to kind of compromise my own values for a will of a board that I didn't necessarily just agree with.
Well, that's absolutely been the case for Montevilla. That was that perfectly describes my first term on the board. It was a lot of me doing research, identifying what needed to happen, and then bureaucracy just took over. And I resigned from the board in July, and so I have to say that I did get a lot of work done in these last few months, despite not being on the board, but I still see the power in the neighborhood associations when we're able to really have representative neighborhood association membership, and when we sort of have a better coalition of folks who are actively working and aren't just using the neighborhood association board positions as a placeholder for their CVs.
Or for their economic interest.
There's a lot of different reasons.
Yes, of course. Yeah, we have some, you know, residents that have moved in, you know, kind of 37-something, lots of energy, you know, having, you know, starting families, this sort of thing. We just live in a small neighborhood of bungalows, you know, less affordable, you know, every month. But
hey, I got to cut you off. I'm really sorry, but we only have about two, three minutes left.
Okay, all right. Thank you for calling.
Maybe we could just, I don't think we can take any more callers. So sorry, thank you for calling in, but we literally only have 3 minutes, and I'd like y'all to give some of your thoughts about this conversation and where you guys are, you know, going in the next months.
Well, to respond to that last caller a little bit too, one of the things that I want to mention is that in the lead up to this election and for the past probably about 6 months and a lot of the work that Johnny's done, there's been a lot of hard work that's gone into actually organizing the neighborhoods on the part of everyone who ran an election. I know that I canvassed. I know there were other people who were running for the board who won, who also canvassed, went to our neighbors and talked to them and spent literally months trying to build up this momentum to be able to have the sort of election that we did have. And that doesn't just come out of thin air. It comes out of hard work. And the Neighborhood Association isn't always the right solution to every problem in the world. But I feel like there are a lot of issues that we can directly address, and we can use that momentum through the structure that already exists in the city.
Yeah, absolutely. And to touch on what they had mentioned about working with coalition getting more done, I think that's partly the problem with the neighborhood associations currently is structurally it doesn't make sense. And I think a restructuring is already in order, and I think the city knows that. So I believe now if you're trying to get involved, it's a good idea, because really there is an advantage to rolling those things into a hybridized system. I think it has to be an ecosystem all based around direct democracy. And that's kind of why it's a good idea to look for other avenues and try to look for people who have that autonomy. autonomy already, especially communities of color have been doing this already and have been ignored by the city. Like, they already have established programs. I want to know what they've been doing and how we can assist and expand that. You know, Vessel just lost their breakfast program or lunch, or like, let's figure out how to do that. I think the APRP already did it, right? APRP has been made doing a breakfast program for years.
So that's definitely what I'm focused on. Housing has been my focus in our neighborhood, and I've really been able to use it to show our neighbors that mutual aid works for us. We did an entire warming shelter with $0. It was all neighbor volunteers, neighborhood donations. We were then able to share donations with a network of other independent small warming shelters that popped up. Our neighborhood has really come through. Like, we have an incredible amount of cooperation and collaboration that I think other neighborhoods aren't able to garner yet. So I hope that that has been my contribution so far to the neighborhood, is that I've helped foster that, because that is definitely my goal.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how things develop, and maybe we'll check back in sometime in the next months or year or so.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Johnny Shaver, Jonathan Ogden, Brian Rose Schreiber. And this is Paul Rowan for Wednesday Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Clean Water Act Turns 45. The celebration will be held on Wednesday, October 18th at 6 p.m. at the Laurelwood Public House and Brewery in Portland. The Clean Water Act has kept huge amounts of pollution out of our waterways and made significant progress towards the vision of fishable, drinkable, and swimmable waterways. Environment Oregon will be celebrating the Act's 45th anniversary with drinks, appetizers, and speakers. Again, that's the Clean Water Act Turns 45. Celebration on Wednesday, October 18th at 6 p.m. at the Laurelwood Public House and Brewery, 5115 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The last 6 weeks have seen an unprecedented number of climate change-related disasters, from multiple hurricanes slamming the Caribbean and the U.S. South to earthquakes in Mexico. Anarchists, anti-fascists, and anti-capitalists have been at the forefront of the disaster relief efforts. Tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. for Mutual Aid Disaster.